great efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfranz.
Here on episode number 7, joining me is Dr. Andrew Brown Jr., former vice president and chief technologist at Delphi Automotive Systems, where we explain the role of the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, and share what he hopes are the biggest takeaways from a phase 2 report on reducing fuel consumption in medium duty and heavy duty trucks. Let's get started.
Hello, today we have joining us Dr. Andrew Brown Jr., former vice president and chief technologist for Delphi Automotive Systems, and who I've had the pleasure of working with, oh, I guess a little over 10 years. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Mike.
We served together on a committee, which was actually the second committee of the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. And it was the second committee looking at medium duty and heavy duty fuel efficiency technologies and practices. The first committee worked prior to that, and we did the work of this second committee, I think around 2014 to 18, and published a report that we want to talk through today with you just a few months ago. So, you know, if you don't mind, Andy, you know, help all the listeners with what is the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, and how did it come to be? And you were started with it far before I did. So how did you get involved?
NACEM, NASEM, is the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. And it's composed of three elements. The National Academy of Sciences, which was established by Congress in 1863. And then more recently, the National Academy of Engineering, which was established in 1964. And then the National Academy of Medicine, established in 1970. Now, all these three entities work together on different subjects. They provide independent, objective analysis and advice to the nation. And they conduct other activities, but basically to solve complex problems and inform public policy decisions. Not a political organization. They're called upon by Congress and any government agency to lend support, to lend help, to tackle difficult problems. And so that's what the organization is all about. Personally, I was elected to the National Academy of Engineering in 2002. Since becoming a member of the National Academy in 2002, I've served on various committees, but more recently I chaired the Board on Energy and Environmental Systems. I chaired that for about 10 years. And what typically happens here is when Congress, the president, any agency of the government seeks special insight, they will reach out to the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine and engage them to do some research and to advise them on what's possible, what's probable. In other words, what might be coming down the road, what's feasible in terms of what you can do that's cost effective and that sort of thing. And so their work ranges from the health sciences, nuclear, and the area we're dealing with, energy and environmental, specifically transportation. The report that we worked on, it was an effort asked by the Department of Transportation, to be specific, and the agency who made the specific request was NHTSA. But that request was directed by Congress, and we'll get into that a little bit, but that's the short and the sweet of it.
One of the ways that I learned how it operates is it goes to find, you know, experts in those subject areas that do not have a conflict of interest and who can help, you know, advise the government on these various topics. So facilitated by the NASM. So, you know, so kind of for everybody, how I got involved is, you know, in around 2007 or 8, I was responsible at Navistar for their fuel economy efforts. I was part of the 21st Century Truck Partnership and others. And I was asked to present to the first committee working on medium and heavy duty trucks. You know, a couple of years later, I left Navistar and started the North American Council for Freight Efficiency. And did not have a conflict of interest and was able to serve and was asked. And so I participated on that next panel. I think you said earlier, you know, kind of how medium and heavy truck energy efficiency, you know, became a, you know, a committee and a, and, you know, in the process. But tell us a little bit more about how do you form the committees? Let's talk about the second committee that, that I was part of. How was the process run? And then we'll get into the report.
Well, I think the listeners will appreciate that medium and heavy duty vehicles are a significant contributor to energy consumption and greenhouse gases in the transportation sector. They account for approximately 22% of the U.S. transportation energy consumption, but unlike the light-duty vehicle sector, which has been subject to corporate average fuel economy standards, the fuel consumption of medium and heavy-duty vehicles has only recently begun to be regulated at the federal level. And this regulation of medium and heavy duty vehicle fuel efficiency was mandated by Congress in 2007 in the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007. Now, Section 101 of that act mandated that the U.S. Department of Transportation issue fuel consumption standards for medium and heavy duty vehicles for the first time. It had never been done before. There's another section, 108, of that same act required the Secretary of Transportation to contract with the national academies to undertake a study on the technologies and costs for improving fuel efficiency in medium and heavy duty vehicles. And then included in that was a requirement that there be a follow-on report at five-year intervals. The 2010 report, which you participated in, that report we call the Phase One report. It was entitled Technologies and Approaches to Reducing the Fuel Consumption of Medium and Heavy Duty Vehicles. It proposed findings and recommendations about the development of fuel consumption, of a fuel consumption program for those vehicles. It postulated metrics for measuring fuel consumption, examined availability and cost of various technologies, and then the potential indirect effects and what we call externalities. It looked at the alternatives for the for scope, stringency, certification methods, and a compliance approach for the standards. Now, we also suggested a demonstration program to validate the innovative certification procedures and regulatory elements. I think one of the keys here is that light-duty vehicles, their metric, their key metric is fuel economy, miles per gallon. However, for commercial vehicles, either on-road or off-road, that doesn't work. And folks in the industry know that, but one of the problems we ran into was the government didn't know that. Yeah, I mean, they kept saying, well, when are you going to give us the recommendations on fuel economy for medium, heavy duty vehicles? And I think you'd be interested, and the audience would be interested in knowing that we had to educate Congress. I remember having to testify before three White House committees to explain to them that these vehicles do work.
Right. You know, it reminds me that, you know, when I made that presentation to the first committee back in 2007, yes, 2008, the subject was really about how these trucks are, you know, what are the various duty cycles? How are they used, even how are they manufactured? And I remember Andy walking through, you know, things like street sweepers and concrete mixers, yes, and mm-hmm, school buses and dump trucks. I intentionally wanted to describe how diverse the medium and heavy duty truck market is. And, you know, even when you think about regulations, you know, oftentimes, you know, maybe a third of the price of the full truck would be the cab and chassis that the truck builder would make. And then that truck would go to a body builder to get, you know, the concrete mixer or all the other parts on it. And I remember looking out at the, you know, the audience, and there were a few, literally their jaws were hitting the table. I mean, they just did not see and understand how diverse it was and how difficult it is to help put together a meaningful regulation. So
absolutely. I think many people, the model they have is they go to a car dealership and they pick the color and the horsepower for their vehicle, and then they drive it off the lot. Well, you can't, as you know, you can't do that with commercial medium heavy duty vehicles. It's a rarity that you're able to do anything even close to that, because those are custom built vehicles generally for a specific task, for a specific use, et cetera, et cetera. And back then, there were a lot of people that were that did not understand that. And so we had to do a lot in educating and explaining how the industry works and how those vehicles actually get designed and built, et cetera. So that was very eye-opening, as you explained. Folks didn't quite understand how all of that came together.
And so by the time we got to the second committee then, the you know, at that point, the greenhouse gas phase one was, you know, in place. So the regulation was in place. Greenhouse gas phase two was being worked on and became final for the phase two, which we're currently operating under. Ironically, just in a few months, we get another big step, or really it kicks off with the 2021 model year.
Right.
The committee sort of spanned, that I served on, kind of spanned the end of the rulemaking for phase two, and then, you know, after the rulemaking became final for greenhouse gas phase two. So, and then the report that was published in, you know, in 2020, you know, let me just give the title of that report. It's Reducing Fuel Consumption and Greenhouse Gas Emissions of Medium and Heavy Duty Vehicles, Phase Two. Let's move to that second effort and really the report. So what was the sort of some of the main challenges there? Again, maybe one of them is the fact that the phase two rule was finalized during the committee's work. I mean, how did that work, and how did that influence the ultimate report?
The committee is composed of anywhere from 15 to 20 individuals, highly technical, but also we look not just for engineers, but economists that can help us understand some of the socio economic impacts. But all of these are, all of the committee participants are highly recognized industry, academic, and government subject matter experts, preferably retired. But the key here is they can't benefit materially from the committee's recommendations. And from time to time, we do make exceptions if we need some very specialized information, and the only way to get it is to give someone an exemption. But and then the members of the academies are recruited as committee participants, and you have to have an academy member to serve as the chairperson. Generally, that's the rule. And so in our committee, we put together what we thought was not only folks who were highly respected technically, but who were also very knowledgeable about how the industry works. And that included academics, included industrial folks with a great deal of experience, government representatives from government agencies who had worked in those agencies and had retired and were available. And that's how the committee comes together. Now, we were challenged by, again, by NHTSA, the National Highway Transportation and Safety administration to look at this. And here we were asked to look out to the year 2030. So our effort was starting in 2013, and we were being challenged to look out 20 years to say what could be done to improve the fuel consumption and reduce greenhouse gases. And again, our examination is feasibility, technology, not policy. We're not a rule-making, rule-setting activity. Our focus is on what are the options available and what are the benefits of those options, both positive and negative, and what are the cost of those alternatives. Some of them are technical. Some of them are commercial. And so that was the challenge of the committee. And so our committee looked at this longer time frame to envision the more dramatic technological developments that could affect the engine and vehicle, as well as possible changes to goods movement. Of the enterprise and to regulatory and compliance alternatives. At the same time, the committee considered near-term improvements to current power plants, for instance, to diesel compression, ignition, and spark ignition internal combustion engines, including the possibility of incorporating hybrid energy storage and drives. So that was the committee and generally what its focus was, and our efforts started in 2013. We worked through 2018, so it was a five-year work task, very involved. And during that period, we also were asked to advise NHTSA and EPA and their rulemaking. And that was in 2014. We took on that task as part to advise them on what were some of the more feasible things that could be done in the near term.
That was, so there was a first report of this second committee that really right. was published, you know, ahead of the final rulemaking for the greenhouse gas 2, which came yes. in August of 2016. So then as we move to the final report, I mean, mm-hmm. by then, you know, one of the pieces that, you know, we added there, I mean, unlike the very first report, now it was more about not, you know, obviously we reviewed the technologies, whether it's aerodynamics or powertrain, yes. tires, idle reduction, all those things that are, you know, are keys there. We also began to look at the validation of regulations or, you know, how they really can prove that they're having the impact they had. And so part of the second report, I remember, not only looked at the technologies, but also looked at the way the regulations are, can best be served to make sure that they force the outcome or affect the outcome of where they're looking for. So again, we'll put a link to that, all of these reports that Andy and I are talking about here, and you'll be able to have a look at them. I really encourage it because, you know, what we've talked about here is the Academy's become sort of an expert conscience or advisor to the government as they go make it. And it's just been an honor for me to be considered somebody that could help do that. And I think it's a really important role that I knew nothing about before I got involved. Andy, as we kind of start to wrap up here, what's your, you know, there's a lot of different customers of those of these reports. Kind of, what's your yes. your biggest hope for this particular report? You know, regulators. There's you know, people who mm-hmm. buy the trucks, the fleets, the manufacturers. There's, you know, other, you know, there's NGOs, nonprofits that of course are very interested in this. I mean, what's your hope for what will be done with what's now out and available in the report?
I think, first of all, to credit the committee, I think there is, even though the report is the final version is only here getting out in 2020. I think there's still very valuable information that can be utilized by regulators and end user fleets and manufacturers and NGOs. I think there's some very good stuff. I hope those groups look at the advice that we provided in the report on developing and introducing vehicle technologies. I think they should continue to, the pursuit of new fuel and power source options, including waste heat recovery, hybrid and electric systems, and auxiliary power sources. And then there's the implementation of new propulsion technologies, new low carbon fuels, and more efficient freight operations and logistics. I think there's a range of opportunities that exist to improve the energy efficiency and reduce greenhouse gas emissions in freight transportation. For example, modifying truck size and weight standards, facilitating intermodal shipments and truck platooning could improve the fuel efficiency of freight shipments. And so those things should continue to be examined. I think we provided a good sound foundation that these folks can build from. And then the last thing I would mention is one of our strongest recommendation is to assure the nation is getting cost-effective solutions that are that will be effective. We propose that an interim evaluation of the medium and heavy-duty vehicle regulations should be done somewhere in the 2021-2022 time period, which would help improve the regulations' overall effectiveness and value. The evaluation's primary focus would be on preparations for any future regulations beyond the phase two standards. So in other words, it gives us an opportunity to see how effective the regulations might be based on real world data.
Yeah, I think a really good example of that is how the greenhouse gas phase two rule deals with electric trucks as one example.
Oh, yes.
It's actually impressive that EPA and NHTSA back in 2014 and 15, before the rule became finalized, really allowed for this idea of an electric truck or other kind of advanced technologies and give it gives it a place in the greenhouse gas GEM rule. Now we're seeing electric trucks and some of these others happen maybe quicker than some of us thought. Hey, Andy, we've got to cut it off there. I think this is really an interesting part of the industry that not a lot of people know about, and we'll make sure they do now. So thanks for joining me. Have a good day.
All right. Take care.
Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrenz.